Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Friday, the 14th of August.
That's right.
Don't want to depress everyone. It's Friday, the Friday the 14th. Good morning. Welcome to our panel this morning. Let me introduce our panelists to you, then we'll get to the business at hand, which is, of course, discussing the issues of the day. And we do so with a great panel this morning. WAMC's Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning.
Good morning, Big Joe. I'm here, aren't I? I mean, you can see me sitting here. None of this business about I've somehow disappeared.
No, you're here.
I'm here.
In all your splendor.
Right. Yeah, well, I am here. Short, but I'm here.
No, you're here. All right. WAMC's Alan Chartok, good morning. Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain.
Good morning.
Yeah, he's here too.
Yep. I'm here.
Here as well. And WAMC's Ray Graff.
Yep, phoning it in.
That's phoning it in since 1996.
That's right.
Good morning. Welcome. Very nice to have you all aboard. Let's invite our listeners to join us. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And all you have to do is write to that email address, and we will include you in the conversation. Why? Because we like you. Roundtable at WAMC.org, or at least most of you. Okay, so
that's a good point. Makes a good point.
Yeah, let's go to, let's start talking about China. Why don't we talk about China? Two big stories coming out of China. Of course, there's the China blast, the blast that has really devastated a part of the country. And then we'll talk a little bit about the economy, which is probably in the long term a much bigger and more concerning story. But we'll start with the explosions in China. They have sent a team of chemical experts to a city in the northern part of the country after explosions left at least 50 dead, according to the state media. The blasts late on Wednesday night ripped through an industrial port area, destroying buildings, shipping containers, and thousands of new cars. It is not known what caused the blast, nor whether chemicals have leaked. More than 3,500 residents are spending the night in temporary shelters. Hundreds are injured, 71 critically. According to the state news agency, they report rescue workers are racing against the clock to save the injured and contain fires. And this goes on days after the massive blast at a warehouse in this part of China. Many of the wounded had glass or shrapnel cuts, skull injuries or fractures, according to hospital officials. And more than 200 experts in chemical materials from the Chinese army have arrived in the city. Their first task is to test the air for toxic gases.
You know, Joe, China, of course, is a dictatorship, and information is at a real premium. Now, that doesn't mean we don't screw it up here, too, when you have crises of great proportions. But it turns out that social media, in this case, it means a great deal, because there are people who are testifying. I was listening to BBC this morning that there is an absolute smell of chemicals in the air. And there are some of the groups who, Greenpeace and others, who are claiming that they can identify what some of those chemicals are. Now, you know, you can take Greenpeace, which is an advocacy group, and decide whether it's accurate or not. I'm fascinated by how the Chinese bureaucracy plays this, what they're doing. We're getting information that the Chinese people are all pulling together, and that they're volunteering money, and that they're giving money. And I have no reason to think that isn't true and heroic, but you better believe that the government is trying to stay on top of this, because it's a real failure for the system.
Several Chinese news outlets appear to be defying a central government ban on independent reporting, and officials in China's third largest city appear to have been unprepared for tough questions about the disaster. On Friday, local officials abruptly ended a news conference that was called to discuss it. So, as you say, information at a premium.
Yep. Yeah, the cause, some are speculating, it could be a stockpile of chemicals of calcium carbide, because that can emit flammable gases when it gets wet. And that may have been what happened. And then it contributed to these incredible explosions. And the photographs, I mean, there's one image of 1,000 cars that were ready to be exported. at the port that are just all burned out. It looked almost like a nuclear blast happened. Yeah. I mean, this is stunning. But some of the reports are saying that, you know, along what you were saying, Alan, that the middle-class Chinese are increasingly becoming militant about this. They've been protesting the storage of these chemicals and dangerous substances near populated areas could lead to something like this. And in recent months, they have picketed and protested and sought some relief to this. So this kind of thing must have been, you know, expected and anticipated, and sadly it did happen, and it will cause a lot of attention to this.
You know, the people, Mike, the People's Army, what is the name of that, Joe? The People's Liberation Army, whatever they call it, the Chinese Army, controls a good deal of the commerce of the nation. It's not only that they're soldiers, but they truly own a good deal of the economy.
Yeah, People's Liberation Army.
Yeah. So one wonders, right, what all this stuff was. Where it was? Who owned it?
Well, some of these chemicals are used for mining, and they have an industrial application. But storing them in an unsafe way, evidently, could be the cause of this explosion. You know, it was reckless when you're in a huge city, third largest city in China.
But I was fascinated by the fact that they said that the army was sending in experts to study it. And to study it, what, study itself? In other words...
Well, they're to test the air, too. I mean, yeah. I think a lot of the experts are going in to test for toxic chemicals.
Right.
According to
and there is some concern more explosions might happen.
You know what my concern is here, that that we're not getting it all and that the Chinese people aren't getting it.
Well, I don't think we're getting it all. If any of these numbers are correct, that 10,000 vehicles were ruined and only 50 people died in a city of how many million? There are numbers that are not adding up.
Correct.
And members of the media have been, in a few cases, there's been reports in the BBC and elsewhere that they've been speaking out and criticizing the government, which may not be good for them, but it shows the...
may not be good for the protesters
or
the government.
For the protester.
Yeah. Right.
Yes. Yeah. But when people do that, you can see the passions and the that must be at play here, and the anger that must, as Ray said, it's much bigger than it sounds.
Yeah. You're right.
Well, there is video. Have you guys seen the video?
Yeah.
Yes.
So the BBC tweeted the video very early, before this broke on any of the major news networks. And whoever took it, I think, was probably on a veranda somewhere, maybe a mile away, and you see the explosions. And then a moment later, the shockwave comes and knocks the photographer down. And he was a good distance away.
Well,
it was huge.
Some of the photos that the BBC had were from satellites. This was visible from outer space.
Yeah.
It was such a large explosion.
Well, I think we can all accept the fact that this has happened and that it was terrible and it's huge, which is what you guys are talking about here. But then comes the more conceptual question, I think, of why it happened. When you get a great crisis, we had a great crisis the other day with the Colorado River, you know, and the pollution, the Colorado River. You can be sure that because of the polarized way we have our politics, that whoever can make a political point out of this will, it's going to go forward, and we're going to have an investigation, which I suspect we're going to know what happened. And I don't know that in a case like this, that the Chinese bureaucracy or the leadership can afford to do that.
The pattern has been there'll be probably criminal indictments against the leaders that allowed this situation to
exist. So there'll be a fall guy.
I believe they're already under arrest, the
is that right?
People, yeah. Well, at least according to the reports I heard this morning.
Yeah. In the old days, what the Chinese would do is bring some schlumpet into a stadium, make him kneel down and shoot him in the back of the head.
Hmm. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue to talk about China. We'll talk a little bit about the economy. We'll get your letters as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Destination Williamstown, a calendar of curated events in the Northern Berkshires, culture, college, cows, DestinationWilliamstown.org. Evoke Style in Stuyvesant Plaza, specializing in women's clothing, shoes, handbags, accessories, gifts, and more. EvokeStyle.com. and the Doan Stewart School, Rensselaer, New York, an early childhood through grade 12 co-educational day school for more than 150 years, announcing admission reception next Tuesday, August 18th at 4 p.m. DoanStewart.org/visit.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Ray Graff. I'm Joe Donahue. For years, China looked like the principled non-combatant as other countries seeking to secure an economic advantage. But the value of their currency slide in international markets, China held firm on the value of its money. But according to the New York Times this week, China jumped into the fray in a surprise decision on Tuesday. The country's authorities began sharply devaluing its currency. And while the currency plunged, that plunge paused on Friday. The currency was still down 4.4% against the dollar this week, a huge drop for China. The abrupt move opens a new phase in what some analysts see as a long-ranging global currency war, a development that could leave the United States exposed and undermine efforts to pull the world economy out of the doldrums. More good news.
Happy news.
Right? No, it's complicated. It's very complicated. The United States dollar has always been the sort of stable part of everybody's economy. And if the dollar is affected by the yuan and the floating, was it down, Joe, 4% something now?
4.4%.
4.4%. And Americans say, okay, well, look, I know it's bad for the country, but it may be bad for our country, but I'm going to go over to China and buy everything I can. It's like a tax-free holiday we're having in Massachusetts. Buy everything I can. Then that makes it worse for American manufacturing and for other countries which are trying to compete in this. And there's really nothing to stop them from doing it, is there?
Well, there's mixed reports about what the impact of this will be. You know, in some cases, they're predicting, as Joe alluded to, that this could really weaken the efforts to come out of the last recession, which is still underway, and the world has not recovered from it.
Yeah, with only a 7% increase in their economy, it's huge.
But it could have a huge impact for companies in China that have borrowed money from banks all across the world. They owe $1.6 trillion. It's going to make it more difficult for them to pay back. I mean, it's sort of like tweaking the economy is so risky, and they're taking some chances here. They even had the unusual. You were talking about the way the government is closed in China, but they had the Bank of China had the unusual circumstance of holding a press conference yesterday to try to explain what they're trying to do here, which I think was a reaction to the panic that a move like this can cause and the idea that it would undermine the security of other currencies, including the dollar, it's frightening.
Well, they've done it before. They just did it recently with their stock market, in which they started buying stocks to bring up the value of the stock.
The government was buying
the government
stocks.
And apparently we haven't heard much about that lately, but it has every time, you know, this is the area of unintended consequences. You do something like that, you don't know what the
ripple effect,
what's going to happen as a result of that.
We have a moment or two for a couple of letters before we go into the break, and we'll do that, and then we'll go hear from the BBC, and we'll come back and tackle other stories.
Anonymous writes, are we getting all the information regarding toxic levels in Colorado? Government will do what they have to do. I think we mentioned something about that. Tom congratulates us on our video today, says he could see us all.
Thank you very much. Hi, Tom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ray's taking that absolutely personally. And David, Joe, that's about all I can see here. Can you see?
Well, that's perfect because we're out of time.
Good.
So that it worked like a charm, I think. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We will move on to other issues and, of course, welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break. I learned a new phrase in reading the news stories yesterday, and I guess I just had never heard it in this context before. And the term is soft conversation. A soft conversation.
Yeah.
And that apparently is what Al Gore, former vice president of the United States, former presidential candidate, is having, according to aides, is having a soft conversation about a Gore 2016 bid. Now,
excuse me, I have to extract my finger from my throat.
So some Democrats are saying that he is just what the doctor ordered when it comes to the Democratic race.
Yeah, loser.
Ouch, man.
And according to officials, they're figuring out if there's financially and politically a path. This according to BuzzFeed News of the conversations. Another member of the inner circle says the discussions involve people talking to people.
Softly.
Softly.
Sotto voce.
Some of whom may or may not have talked to him. That is a soft conversation.
Having a conversation with the voices in his head.
I think we're being, we're discussing it softly here.
Yes. Yeah. So I will ask these two simple questions.
There'll be no tipper to kiss.
That's true. That might help.
Ouch again, man!
Wow!
Wow!
So, and I should note before we start our discussion, although maybe it's already begun, and that is that the Gore camp has distanced themselves and said that that they're not aware of these soft conversations.
Uh-huh.
Unbelievable.
All right. So what do you think of this?
Well, look, I'm not a Gore fan. That's obvious.
Really?
I think he should have fought harder. He there are many people, including me, who think he really won that election. And he just sort of limped off into the dust, whatever. I have a personal reaction to the guy. You know, we here at WAMC love when we get a hold of something that is an extraordinary testimonial. So one night, I'm up in the middle of the night, I turn the television on, and there's Gore talking to a bunch of kids, maybe at American University, someplace like that. And he's waving his hands around. He's saying, I am the president, and, you know, I did win that election, and this is a terrible thing. So I say, wow, this is really good. I'd love to be able to give that out as a premium during the fund drive. So I know I can't do it, so I get Maurice Hinchey and a whole bunch of other people to ask for it. And this is some of my antipathy towards the guy. The day the fund drive begins, and we had like 3 weeks to go, and the day the fund drive, we hear from him is a person who says to us, Mr. Gore doesn't want anybody else to make money from his work. I was just astounded by that. A public radio station. It was good for him. I thought that really put a face on the guy, as far as I was concerned.
Well, isn't the real issue, and, you know, besides
personal
what you're saying,
stuff of
isn't the real issue here that this kind of talk is because Hillary is suffering from overexposure, and now there's all kinds of scenarios.
Sure.
You know, Biden, we had Joe Biden's little bit louder discussion that was going on about Joe Biden a few weeks ago, which was real, you know. It was some conversations. And, you know, is there somebody else? John Kerry's name has been thrown out. People are looking at an alternative scenario on what could happen if Hillary implodes.
Yeah. I think you're right. And I think if this gets any louder, then I think you'll know that the powers that be, one would assume that Hillary is the Democratic establishment candidate and the power brokers want her to be the candidate. And one would assume that if Biden or Gore or another high profile jumps in, that means the email case or some other thing is seriously threatening to take her down.
Do we have to go 20 years into our past, though, to find a candidate on the Democratic side who would excite the electorate? Meaning, is there not somebody more contemporary who has been in or is in politics.
Martin O'Malley would say, we don't need to go back.
Oh, Bernie.
Bernie. So
is the Democratic establishment that fearful of a Bernie nomination?
We'll find out.
Well, it does seem reminiscent of 1968 before Lyndon Johnson announced that he did not want to seek re-election, and that's Eugene McCarthy getting traction before Bobby Kennedy jumped in the race.
Yeah.
And, you know, just having a sort of liberal alternative to the establishment candidate, like you described it, Ray, you know, can get a lot of traction and really change the course of things. And it did in 1968. Of course, Hillary's in so far, and it's unlikely she'll pull out unless, like you said, you know, Joe, that something is going to take her down, and or Ray said something is going to take her down.
Whatever.
Ray's not a guy who wants the credit. So,
no.
But anyway, Eric checked in, and he says, Gore, as the 30-year-old said, Al who? Although I believe the Supreme Court stole the election, it should never have been that close. He would have won without question had he been a better candidate. Dukakis and Mondale redo. What do you think?
Those names, too, are, you know, Walter Mondale's still out there.
Hubert Humphrey.
Michael Dukakis is still out there. Well, Hubert Humphrey has passed away, but those guys could all jump in.
Yeah,
I think if Hillary implodes, the Democrats need a new face. And Bernie Sanders, I think he's an old face. He's been around a long time.
Oh, yeah. Well.
The letters will come in.
Yes. Do we have any other letters, or are we good?
I don't see any. I don't see any. Roselle wrote me a personal message.
Oh, hi, Roselle.
But other than that, nothing, no.
Okay. So let us move on to Hillary Clinton then. She released a $350 billion plan for student debt and education. This is, many people have said during the course of this, that she has been on the defensive and has not been on the, has been defensive, not offensive, in saying what she's going to do as the President of the United States. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's a good setup.
It is a great setup, but I have to tell you, we just got a letter from Kathy who says, Alan, Calvin Trillin summed up Gore up years ago as a man-like object.
A man-like object. I love Calvin Trillin.
Me too.
Okay, so when Hillary Clinton unveiled her plan this week to make higher education more affordable, Senator Marco Rubio of Florida promptly dismissed it as Obamacare for college. Jeb Bush, the former Florida governor, asserted that she would burden taxpayers by throwing more federal money at the problem. But despite early criticism from rivals and pointed questions about the political feasibility of her proposal, Mrs. Clinton's ambitious, expansive $350 billion plan to reduce debt in higher education has opened a new front in the presidential campaign. It has put pressure on her opponents as she has made a centerpiece of her agenda an issue that resonates across classes, party lines, and generations. In other words, let me just say that again, she, weirdly enough, is talking about an issue.
Well, which she,
how dare she?
Yeah.
Which she needs
an
do.
Idea.
Which she needs to do. I mean, she's being attacked from the left by Bernie, who has already said college should be free. Period. I happen to agree with him. College should be free. Period. So, I've never understood how we can say if this is all about equality of opportunity. That's what the Republicans say. It's what the Democrats say, equality of opportunity. How can you have equality of opportunity if we'll put a kid through pre-K to high school, but not do the one thing that separates everybody out, which is college? This is an obligation on the part of America, and it really needs to be done. She sees it. All parents understand it. Ray has five kids. They're going to be going to college, and he's going to have to pay for them.
If they can learn to spell college, I mean, we'll certainly cross that bridge.
And you know, I know at the point at which my kids went to college, I literally had four jobs to make the money that
I
needed.
That's also part of her plan, is to provide some relief for millennials who are now sacked with $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $80,000, $100,000 in debt. and they can't lower the interest rate. They can't go out and buy a house because they're too indebted to qualify for a mortgage, and it's just kind of slowing down the American dream for a whole generation. It would allow renegotiation of a current student debt, and I think that's also necessary. I think we let it get out of hand. And another element of this, which I think is going to be popular, I don't think the $35 billion in federal money will be popular for conservatives.
$350 billion.
Yes, yeah. 10 times.
Add the zero.
Yes. But I think it was billion, wasn't it?
Yeah, billion. Yeah.
B with a 300
with a B.
Billion.
Yeah, billion. Anyway, I don't think that'll be popular, and the conservatives and the Republicans will attack her for that. But the element of making the colleges, an element of this in her plan is making the colleges more accountable and taking steps to keep tuition from rising so quickly. It almost does sound like Obamacare. I mean, that was Obamacare's effort was not to lower the cost of health care, but was to intervene to prevent it from rising more rapidly because it's inevitable that it's going to go up, just given the demographics of our country.
I read to you many of the comments from the various political candidates. Left out John Kasich of Ohio, the governor, who said, frankly, I've been dying to talk about this, and I welcome the debate over this because it's a big issue, and he wants to replicate programs in his state that have held down the price of tuition. So,
yeah. And then
candidate interested in talking about an issue.
And Scott Walker made fame by cutting higher education in his state. So it'll define the differences between the Democrats and the Republicans if this conversation carries.
Indeed. So Robert says, what does Robert say anyway?
says, hi, Deborah.
Robert says, claims panel, claims of Hillary's imminent implosion are more prayers on the Republican side and wimpiness on the Democrat than anything else. I haven't heard any of her supporters say that they have changed their minds about voting for her, and the polls showing trust, there are questions are hardly suspicious, dispositive. I don't know. I have heard people who originally...
Wasn't one of her major donors questioning his contributions?
Well, no, but I have. I talked to the people. In the street.
On the street.
Yeah, and here and in other places. And I'll tell you, I know that Bernie, and many people are writing to us about this, saying Bernie could, if he won, would be the death of the Democratic Party. In other words, they would lose the general election. Yeah. A lot of people believe that. Deborah says, can't we see historic significance of a woman candidate as we saw historic significance of Obama? And that's from Deborah, who happens to be a politician herself. And Matt says, good point about who currently could excite if Hillary is smoking and going down. Remember that Macarena bit with Gore on SNL? Hardly an exciter these days, or then.
Well, that's true. That was sort of the moment when you knew he wasn't going to run in 2004.
I don't remember that bit.
Yeah, he went on SNL, and he ended up in a hot tub, and I just
Joe Lieberman.
With Joe Lieberman. Clearly, this man is not running for president of the United States. So,
talking about the locked box.
And Ted says, "How about free food for everyone? What's more important than that?" Seriously, once college is free for everyone, we will then find someone else to separate one citizen from the other. So therefore, don't do it. Let me respond to you and say, I don't agree with you. Okay, Margaret says, there are things to recommend it, but there's one very big caveat. Students must be responsible for keeping their grades up, keeping their spots, and succeeding in graduating. If this becomes another situation where the teachers and institutions are held responsible for student success, the whole exercise will have been pointless. And by the way, the letter goes on, and yesterday I got severely criticized from somebody who said, I had another three or four paragraphs, you didn't read them. And we have always made it plain, as General the Army Eisenhower said, if it's worth saying, you can say it in a paragraph.
Yeah.
And so...
it's just not time.
Well, yeah. 140 characters. We've defined it, and there you go. And even in most email programs on the bottom, it tells you how many characters.
It's nothing personal. There's just not enough time. We only have X number of minutes in a program, and if you give us four pages, we can't read them.
Yeah, right?
We apologize.
Yeah. Oh, you apologize?
Maybe we should make the show 5 or 6 hours.
I didn't apologize.
He said maybe we should apologize. I think he was including.
We apologize,
but asking.
The facts are the facts. We cannot go too far in reading long letters.
But what if you're doing it in order to somehow weaken the case of the letter writer? Don't you see? I said that in...
I have no idea what you mean by that.
Well, I was being sarcastic.
Ah!
You see? They write and say, you did that. You did that on purpose. No, you were right.
Okay.
Okay, so then... then Mark
I think
said,
that was Alan's way. It's like he agrees with you.
Okay.
Good morning.
I'll look at the transcript later and try to figure it out.
Good morning. I hope Hillary doesn't implode, but if she does, I agree the Democrats will need a new face. Bernie Sanders can't win because he just not does not connect with people of color in the inner cities. Okay. And let's see here.
It's really dubious whether somebody who's not in it already could pull together the organization at this late date and pull it off. I don't know when that has happened in the last 70 years.
No, I think if Hillary is not the candidate, and I've already announced here to my great detriment that I'm voting for Bernie, but if Hillary is not the candidate here, I think the Democrats are in real trouble.
Now, when you say you'd vote for Bernie...
Yeah.
Does that mean if he runs as a third party, you will vote for
him?
You can't vote in the primary. You can in Massachusetts.
By the way, he has already announced that he's not going to do that third party thing. He's not a Trump. He's announced he's doing this. He's making his points. There are a lot of people who are excited by his candidacy, the Democratic middle left, and they're getting into huge stadiums and all the rest of it. But if in fact he gets to be the candidate, I'm afraid he might lose. Yep. Gregory says, Bernie, feel the burn. Bernie's the man.
Feel the burn.
That's what Gregory said.
It's nice. We've seen that around. That's getting some traction, that phrase.
Yeah.
Hashtag.
Feel the burn. Yeah. Joe Mentum. Remember that one?
Joe Mentum, right.
B-E-R-N.
Ted says, have we already forgotten what has and is happening with Obama? Think of Bernie Sanders as president with a GOP-led Congress. Why is that not being put in the discussion? You just did it, Ted. Whoever you are, Ted did it. Okay. And Bernie Sanders is how we'll get a Trump presidency, says John. He might be able to win the primaries, but a socialist will not beat a capitalist in the general election. And Chad says, play more Django.
Yeah, there you go.
We love Django. What's the name of the film? Do we know what the name of the film is?
The Woody Allen film,
in which we'll get 19 responses on this, in which he's...
Midnight in Paris? Was it that
I think that's what it was. Midnight in Paris, and he's chasing... The world's second greatest guitar player is, quote, chasing the gypsy.
Hmm.
Yeah, which is a word which is inappropriate, by the way. I want to point that out. Okay. And I've been listening to WMC for at least an hour a day for a year now. At that time, I've only heard one interview of a woman by a woman produced by WMC, not on 51%. That is just not true. Joe does it all the time.
What do I do?
An interview of a woman or by a woman?
Interview women. By
the way, I'm sorry. I was busy looking up Woody Allen movies. Sweet and Lowdown is the film.
Sweet and Lowdown,
1999, with Sean Penn and Samantha Morton. And it's a fictional jazz guitarist, Emmett Ray, who idolizes Django.
Hmm. And by the way, just because I get so angry when people write me letters like that.
Yeah.
Name another station in the world that has a 51%. They do not. And, you know, just dismiss 51% because that's a show about women. Like, it makes me angry. That's all. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Take
a deep breath.
Okay. Joan says, how about Bernie and Deval Patrick or Cory Booker or Barbara Lee for vice president? Jim says, I'm 71 years old. I'm still paying off a parent loan for my 29-year-old son. He still has a loan balance of $40,000 despite some forgiveness for his Peace Corps service. My two daughters owe a combined $50,000, and my youngest daughter has to spend another semester in school because she's short three courses. Yikes. I'll never be a grandfather.
Yikes is right. I mean, this is pulling down, weighting down an entire generation and at least Hillary Clinton is offering some plan to help the current college graduates deal with that enormous debt.
Okay. And then, let's see. It just keeps coming. That's it for now.
All right. So let us move on to other topics and find out what's happening. Mike, you have an interesting story. A good talker, as you say.
Yes, sort of from the TU. Claire Hughes, who covers health and medicine, has a pretty interesting story today about some research being done between the University of Albany and Albany Medical Center working together. They've developed a possibility of diagnosing Alzheimer's disease early on. And that, of course, would help begin treatment and slow the progress of the disease.
It's a great story.
It is. It uses biophotonics, which I guess is using lasers going through, light going through blood samples that are taken from individuals. And from the results of the way that the light goes through this blood sample, they're able to make a correlation. That would make it inexpensive and easy to regularly test people. Today, people are diagnosed with Alzheimer's after doctors observe symptoms, and by that time, often it's too late to really begin any treatment to slow it down or reverse it. There's been some success there, but an early diagnosis of the disease would be a great help in finding it. And this is this collaboration between UAlbany and Albany Med scientists was funded by the NICAP Research Alliance, which was created with $950,000 from the Regional Economic Development Council initiative, the state initiative to try to develop around the state. So it's a good example of how public money went, and it could be.
For once.
Yes. Well, for once. But this has been published. This work has been published in the Journal of Biophotonics, and we'll see.
But there are people who people who, and your excellent article shows us that there are people who don't think it's for real, and so there's got to be a lot of testing.
Skepticism,
before we
of
know.
Course, yeah.
And
yeah.
then the second thing I saw when I was reading it is our wonderful hero Earl Zimmerman, who has been here many times, been a volunteer. His wife's been a volunteer. He's one of the two principal investigators in this. This whole business of if we know earlier, we can do something about it. I just didn't realize that. I'm sure it's true, but I never realized that we had any tools really to slow down Alzheimer's.
Yeah, well, often there's medications that can mitigate its impact, but you can't even have that experimentation and that discussion until you can have early diagnosis. So this is the beginning of that new way of dealing with the disease.
Well, I hope it's they're onto something here. It's great.
Yeah.
We all right. We want to. Do we have other letters that you want to get to there?
Yeah. Well, Ken. Ken takes me to great task.
Oh, good.
Ken says, "It is not." Capital letters, just the center left for Bernie. It's all Americans that are finally waking up from three-decade-long political coma because they finally, in capital letters, here, H-E-R-E, but it's H-E-A-R, someone clearly, passionately advocating for them. Okay, that's your say.
And we're short.
Someone mentioned that Bernie doesn't have the support of Black America and the inner city. Can you name one candidate that does have their support? Well, if you look at the polling, Hillary has a lot more support from Black America than Bernie Sanders does. That's the case. Even though I could make the case that Bernie Sanders has a great deal to offer to people who have been oppressed, but the reality is the polls are showing she's way way ahead of him in Black America. It seems like every candidate is an out of touch white person. Love the show, and that's from Patrick. Thank you, Patrick. Oh my, Hillary is talking about an issue. I dare say that much of what we hear in the news, such as drug abuse, gun violence, driving while impaired, may be related to an underlying problem. Maybe our society needs to get over the taboo about mental health issues and treatment, and that's from Liz. All right, Liz. And Vince says, if Hillary Clinton is going to tackle higher education, she has to address the problems of both graduate and undergraduate education. Grad students also are often left out of the conversation, and this neglect drives abuse. And like that. And let's see here. I guess, What about Jim Webb from Virginia? Also, college was a lot less expensive when I went to school in the 1960s. Yeah, but in the 1960s, a Coca-Cola was what? you know, a quarter.
Yeah.
Or like I was a baby then, so maybe. I have no idea. Yeah.
You know, Jim Webb.
I wrote well. Jim Webb, I remember, from Virginia.
I think that's a good point. He's in the race. He's a formal declared candidate, and he did it over the 4th of July weekend, and I don't know that it got a lot of attention. So you have Lincoln Chafee from Rhode Island, and you have Martin O'Malley, and you have Bernie Sanders, and you have Jim Webb. So there are Democrats in this field. Not insignificant Democrats.
Mm. What would his theme song be?
Which one?
Jim Webb.
Beautiful Balloon?
No.
Dragnet? Would You Like to Fly? The Jimmy Webb, sure.
No.
What?
Be kind to your web-footed friends.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're out of time. I want to thank you very much
for
tuning in this morning. It's been very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, Mike Spain make up the orchestra this morning. Please tip your waiters and waitresses.
On the way
Drive safely on your way home. We'll be back after this.